the grim darkness creeping into the only thing I could find in new fantasy novels in the early 2000s was clearly a traumatic experience for me.
If only we could take our love of reading to a new level.
Well, I've always wanted to start a book club.
Book club!
For masochists and other deviants.
Hello and welcome to the Book Club for Masochists, where we read and discuss all the genres and types of literature, regardless of our actual interest in them.
Every month, we read books from a new, randomly picked genre. Then on the podcast, we discuss our reading choices, experiences, opinions, appeal factors, and other related topics as friends and library workers.
This is episode number 191, and so we are talking about the genre of dark fantasy.
Ooh.
Debates to come.
My name is Jam. I'm a librarian in Vancouver, British Columbia, which is located on the traditional, ancestral, and unceded land of the Musqueam, Squamish, Tsleil-Waututh, and Stolo people.
I'm Matthew. I'm a librarian in Fort Collins, Colorado, USA.
And my name is Anna. I'm also located in Fort Collins, Colorado, USA, which is the traditional and ancestral homelands of the Arapaho, Cheyenne, and Ute nations and peoples.
You're also still a librarian.
Yeah, I am still a librarian. That didn't change.
Like our listeners might have thought. Our listeners might be wondering.
I mean, yeah, I did leave it out, so it's possible.
You never know. Sneaky, sneaky life changes.
Right?
My name is Megan, I am an archivist. I'm still on the unceded traditional territory of the Algonquin Anishinaabe, which is still usually known as the National Capital Region of Canada.
Establishing exactly what has and has not changed in our worlds.
Everything and nothing.
So this episode, as with every episode of covering a genre, we have put together a book list of titles by Black, Indigenous, and People of Color authors in the genre that we're talking about. So there is a book list on our website and in the show notes for this episode of dark fantasy novels by BIPOC authors. And Jam didn't make it all by themselves this time.
No, Matthew contributed many titles this time, and so he got to make the announcement.
I even read one of them.
Ooh.
Oh, nice.
Excellent.
So what is dark fantasy?
Listen. This week, I typed into Google, what is the difference between horror, dark fantasy, and grimdark? And it's still murky. There were many opinions.
It's just fantasy that has a higher cocoa percentage.
Less milk.
Yeah, exactly.
Ostensibly, horror is horror. Dark fantasy is like gloomy and oppressive, which might also be like gothic fantasy for all I know. And grimdark, if it's not like a parody of Warhammer 40K, has morally questionable protagonists and everybody is sad at the end.
I feel like I've definitely read dark fantasy. And I think that I checked out some dark fantasy from the library, but what I ended up reading this month was some of it, you know, I picked it because someone tagged it dark fantasy or it was sorted somewhere as dark fantasy, but just felt more like horror than what I thought dark fantasy was.
Yeah, I get the feeling that there was a shift over time in terms of what dark fantasy referred to, perhaps. Like, I remember, so I was a teenage reader of fantasy. This was all that I read all the time. And this was in the 90s. I read a lot of it. And then towards the end of that time period, as I got into my early 20s, and as my life was already changing anyways, I started to notice that fantasy was getting grimmer and grimmer. And people started to refer to this as dark fantasy. And that's what I thought of for the longest time. I thought of dark fantasy as just this really grim fantasy that has a lot to do with very morally ambiguous situations. There's few, if any, true heroes, and even your heroes are constantly in danger of dying or horrible things happening to them at any moment. And the casts are often big because they're killing people off all the time. So that's what I thought of as dark fantasy. But over time, I've started to notice more and more often people use it to talk about that, like, mesh between fantasy and horror, and that it's more about the horror aspects integrating within the fantasy settings and situations. And I think this is also just, like, reflected in the way that, what is it, became very common for a while to refer to, like, anything that is unreal, speculative fiction. Speculative fiction started to become really common, and I think this sort of is in the similar time frame of, like, as speculative fiction became more and more a thing that you started to see in mainstream literary fiction, like, people who read literary fiction as their genre would start to include some amount of this speculative fiction in there, which bled weirdly into sometimes fantasy, but sometimes not, or had fantasy elements. And that's where I start to think, like, a lot of these begin to get more wobbly.
There's an interesting thing, I think, where, you know, a lot of horror has fantastical elements in it, but we don't think of it as fantasy. And listening to you all talk about this made me think about, like, to me, dark fantasy can't be, like, or it's much more it's, I don't know. Like, if I think about it immediately, I don't think modern day urban fantasy. You know, like, in my mind, it is historical fantasy. But that is definitely not the case for everybody, you know? But, and I think this is potentially just because I don't read this. But yeah, like, I'm sure there is dark urban fantasy. I mean, I've read some this month, you know, not necessarily dark urban fantasy, but, like, dark contemporary fantasy. And it seems like this term describes a lot of different subgenres, and I'm sure the people that read them know exactly what they want to read, and don't necessarily want to read the other stuff. I saw something online recently. This person is suggesting that one of the reasons why the term romantasy has become so popular recently is because it's the only way to stop reply guys from suggesting you read George R.R. Martin's books when you ask for a fantasy novel. You know, that's you're looking for a fantasy novel suggestion, and they're like, you should read this one. And you're like, that's definitely not what I want to read. And whereas if you call it romantasy, they can't recommend that anymore. I'm sure some of them still do, however.
I'm sure they'll recommend Brandon Sanderson.
One interesting thing that I'd be interested to get your take on, Matthew, is that when I looked up dark fantasy on Novelist, the database, I had to do a lot of adjusting, because at first it was all manga. It was all manga suggestions. And I feel like dark fantasy is like, I was like, oh, I guess this is also like a specific manga subgenre.
I wouldn't even say subgenre. I would say it's a specific manga. It's Berserk.
Yeah. I am looking at the Wikipedia category dark fantasy anime and manga, and the first thing on the page is Berserk.
Berserk, a title very popular with people that don't like spending money on manga. I will get into this more later on. But yes, the other one that I think non-prose area for dark fantasy is in video games, where I think there are very popular dark fantasy video games, such as Dark Souls and Elden Ring.
Oh, yeah.
And those ones, I think, definitely fall into this category and are exceptionally popular and successful right now.
Yeah, all of the From Software, I think, is the studio that did both of those. Am I making that up?
I've never played any of them and have no interest in playing them, so I don't know. It sounds right.
Yeah, From Software.
This is one of those genres where before I started looking into it, I would have said, oh yeah, I know a dark fantasy when I see one. And then I dug into it and was like, oh no, I don't think I know a dark fantasy when I see one. And maybe what all the horror I've been reading for the past year is actually dark fantasy.
Right, yeah.
I don't know anymore.
I had a similar experience, and I definitely thought immediately of the Leech's book that I read around Halloween for that horror episode. And I was like, yeah, I think that fits fully right into this arena of dark fantasy. Although it does also have a little bit of like, where is fantasy and where is sci-fi happening.
Oh my gosh. Jam, I'm just looking at this dark fantasy anime and manga category on Wikipedia. Hmm? No.
No?
Some of these definitely are, but others, I'm like, this does not fall into this category, in my opinion.
I'm sure of Magic Knight Ray Earth, but I haven't read it.
There are dark elements of that, but if anyone is like, oh, can you recommend me a dark fantasy manga? I think anyone who is like, I really loved Berserk, what else should I read? Anyone who reads Magic Knight Ray Earth next is going to be disappointed.
Yes. I was obsessed. Now I'm just looking at the. Now we're just talking about this Wikipedia list. I was obsessed with Pet Shop of Horrors when I was like a teen, because there was not a lot of manga available at my local Barnes and Noble. And so I would like look at the one shelf over and over for anything new. And anytime there was a new volume of Pet Shop of Horrors, I would sit down and read it because I was I never read the whole series. I think I ended up reading like two volumes, but I just remember like wanting to read it so bad because I was like, ooh, it's fantasy, but it's spooky and it's like a, you know, I don't know. I really liked it.
The Legend of Zelda Twilight Princess is listed on this page.
Well, Twilight Princess, I haven't read the mangas, so I can't speak to that. I also haven't played the game. Here's what I can tell you about Twilight Princess. I follow some people who ship some of the characters very hard.
Awesome.
Actually, the extent of my knowledge.
But honestly, this list is kind of interesting because it's like, you know, plenty of fantasy has dark elements. Like maybe even the majority of fantasy because you need conflict and things like that happening. But I would not describe those as dark. Though again, I don't read this genre.
Yeah, I'm wondering if like, you know, for this, if within manga, it means a specific thing that we're not exactly keying into. And yeah, like I think Anna said, it has probably also changed over time.
There's also some like non-fantasy titles on that list. So it's very questionable. Wikipedia, the encyclopedia that anybody can edit.
Did you read the Wikipedia article for Dark Fantasy?
I have it open.
I looked at it.
I've skimmed it.
It made me feel better about not really knowing or not feeling like I knew what Dark Fantasy was, because apparently the two main people who are said to have sort of developed the genre had two different ideas about what it meant. So one thought it was like horror fantasy, kind of, and the other one thought it was grim, amoral protagonists. And I'm like, there we go.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was always kind of a mix of things. And so maybe it was just a particular trend in time to refer to those things as dark fantasy. And they've separated into like weird horror fantasy and grimdark, if grimdark is still current. I'm not entirely sure if grimdark is still current.
Yeah, grimdark is an interesting one because it's like, you know what? Dark fantasy isn't dark enough for me. I need something darker and grimmer than dark fantasy.
I wish to crush the last little bits of hope you had left for your anti-heroes.
I will tell you, like, there was definitely, as a fantasy reader moving from the 90s into the 2000s, like, this is what made me stop. Well, this is not what made me stop reading fantasy. That would be a lie to say that. But this wasn't a contributing factor, right? Like, there was a shift in terms of the amount of it that was being produced, and it was taking over the kind of what was available to me as a fantasy reader. And it was getting harder and harder to find anything that didn't have, like I was telling Matthew, there was a time where I don't remember what the book was, but I was reading some book with a big cast of characters, and it was one of these like grimdark fantasies. And after the second time that one of the female protagonists or leads was raped, like a different one, like there were two different ones that went through this. And I was like, no, this is not, why am I reading this? What is the point of having a fantasy in which people behave horribly and everybody is hurting everybody else and there is no hope? Like, that is not the reason why I read fantasy. I don't read fantasy to feel worse about all of my fellow humans.
So, what are our experiences with the genre?
Okay, yes. Yeah, so, I just said mine. Well, but I will say, As we think about it from different focuses, like the horror one, one of my favorite books that I've read a number of years ago was The Library at Mount Char by, oh, I've forgotten his first name, Scott Hawkins. So The Library at Mount Char by Scott Hawkins. And I just really enjoyed that book. And that definitely sits in the realm of dark fantasy with the horror sort of descriptor to it. Like, it is fantastical, but it is also set in modern day world, but there's magic and gods and like crazy things happening, and it definitely has the sort of gods and archetypal feel that fantasy sort of brings into things, and magic and all of that, and it doesn't quite feel like horror does. There's a difference there that's so hard to categorize, especially because I'm not really a horror reader, right? So this was very outside of what I would normally have enjoyed, but I loved it. I thought it was great. It is very violent. I will say that as a warning for anybody who might be interested.
Now, I'm just thinking about one of your favorite books, Bastard Out of Carolina.
Yes.
And if that was instead Bastard Out of the Shire, would that be dark fantasy?
Good Lord. No, I mean, I'm not sure if, maybe, I'm not sure if it would be. It's interesting that you asked that question actually to consider those like overlapping with each other, because one of the things about fantasy is that it's very rare to have a fantasy novel that isn't scoped large, right? And Bastard Out of Carolina is scoped quite small. You're following just a little girl's life over a handful of years and very everyday sort of interactions and experiences. And yes, some of them are very grim and violent, but it's scoped very small. So I think that's sort of an interesting thing to consider in terms of like how we define fantasy. Is one of the components is often that there is sort of like the stakes are big. In terms of what's happening. It's not always true, but the vast majority of fantasy, the stakes are very large in terms of what's occurring.
I think you're seeing more smaller stakes fantasy that is the opposite of dark fantasy, in that it's the cozy fantasy stuff.
To segue, I think my background with this is mostly small scale dark fantasy. Small scope dark fantasy, and mostly in the young adult area, which I think makes sense for that to be where that overlap is, where they're very sort of character driven stories about a teenage protagonist. Specifically, I think I've read a bunch of these, but specifically I'm thinking of Holly Black, who's done a bunch and who I really like, and who, when I was thinking about what I think of as dark fantasy, she's one of my go-to authors for what that is in my brain. I did check out her adult dark fantasy book. Did not read it. It's very thick. I read thin books this month. But yes, Holly Black has done a bunch of like, I guess I've talked about books I read of hers on the show before, but sort of, not quite urban fantasy, but contemporary, and like people are, you know, like what if fairies were hot sociopaths? And I guess I don't know if the vampire one counts as fantasy, but the vampire one, The Coldest Girl in Cold Town, is probably her darkest one. And I did also really enjoy that one, even as somebody who does not care for. It was also more of a zombie story. Do not care for vampires or zombies, but really like that one. But yeah, YA is my background coming into this.
I think it's interesting that you bring up the urban fantasy part of it too, because I also was thinking about the overlap with urban fantasy, which, having read a fair amount of that, that's a genre that I've enjoyed and I've read a lot in. I never in the past would have considered it a dark fantasy per se, but now as we are like having, as we did this month and had to like really think about all this, I did start to see like many of them do have significant overlaps with a lot of the characteristics of dark fantasy. So it's interesting, or of dark fantasy when you think sort of grim darkly in there a little bit.
Grim Darkly. I love that
Grim
guy.
Grim Darkly. Yes. I mean, they're also playing with horror elements, but a lot of the times the horror elements are not this really the scary aspect of it to some degree, if that makes sense. Like, it isn't the fact that they are a monster that's scary. It's the human type of choices they're making. And yes, they are a monstrous creature making those choices, but they're very, like, human-style choices that are being made that are monstrous, if that makes sense, right? It's the harms we do to each other that is the actual horror.
Man, the greatest monster of all. I have read a number of comics that I would classify as dark fantasy. I can't think of any novels right now or prose fiction, but the two are Berserk by that guy, by Kentaro Miura. I'd read some of that before this month. And the other one is Monstrous by Marjorie Liu and Sana Takeda. And Monstrous is one that is beautiful art, an incredibly built up world. Like, there's so much thought that has gone into that, into the world building there. But also, my gosh, that's a dark story. Also, today I bought volume 5 for $1 at Barnes & Noble. For some reason, the Barnes & Noble exclusive cover of volume 5 was $1 in their discount section. I do not know why. But I didn't have that one, so I was happy to buy it for $1. So I think those are my experience with it. And like, both of those are series where the darkness of it was something that I actually felt hard to deal with often. Like Monstrous, I have read and will probably continue reading. I hope to continue reading because I think it's just so well done. And the art is incredibly beautiful, but it's a tough read at times, I find. Have any of you read it?
I've read the first volume, I believe, but that was back when it first came out, so I cannot genuinely actually remember much about it, I will say.
It's a tough one because every time I read a new volume, I'm like, I don't remember what was going on. Yeah. Because this is such a complicated story.
Even just reading one volume of it, I could totally see that being true, or from my memory of it. But it certainly is beautiful and it is compelling, or it was compelling. But it did seem like one of those things you'd sort of have to make a commitment to.
You know, I think one thing that is in that one that we haven't really mentioned as part of a potential aspect of dark fantasy is like war fantasy and the darkness of war, and really going in depth into what a major war looks like in the fantasy world. Because often wars and fantasies are just like, oh yeah, a whole bunch of people fought each other over there. And our heroes are fine, you know, but actually dealing with what a war looks like and the after effects and everything. Because war is a horrible thing and it affects a lot of people. But if you're looking at it on like the death of one person is a tragedy, the death of a million people is a statistic, is kind of what it becomes.
Yeah, I kind of hate war as a plot line in fantasy novels. And it's a fairly common, if not the direct plot, then like a theme or a background situation. But yeah, I would definitely be more interested in reading a like very character focused, small scale, as we say, story from someone's point of view in that situation.
I guess a little bit of background. I will say that I have read a couple of Ravenloft stories, which are Forgotten Realms in a specific, but the summary says, Gothic horror tales in the Ravenloft dark fantasy setting. So there you go. There's all the key words.
You forgot one, which is Dungeons and Dragons.
I thought Forgotten Realms automatically meant Dungeons and Dragons, but no, that's important too.
Only if you know what Forgotten Realms is.
To us, it is. To our listeners, it may not be.
Okay, fair enough. And I've already talked about like my background in like horror and vampires and urban fantasy and all that kind of stuff, which you can consider perhaps having overlaps. And then most recently in the past year, I would say some of the dark fantasy style books that I have read. I'm going to call out Nettle and Bone by T. Kingfisher, and then most of the Cassandra Claw that I have read in the last year probably hits that middle ground between dark fantasy and horror, the horror side of dark fantasy. So I am more horror, gothic, dark fantasy than I am grimdark, dark fantasy. But yes, I like it.
I forgot one book, which is Norilska Groans by Michael R. Fletcher and Clayton W. Snyder, which came out a few years ago that I listened to as an audiobook. That definitely falls into the grimdark category, which I did not know when I started listening to it. Because I'm like, oh, weird Russian bureaucracy fantasy, which is really kind of how you can describe it in many ways. But a lot of grim things, a lot of grim, dark things happen in that. A lot of death, a lot of not, like you said earlier, you know, there's not happy endings in that. It was a good story, but I was also just like, oh my gosh, this is depressing.
Yeah. I mean, a fair lot of this has to do with tone too, because you can have a lot of really horrible things happen in a story, and yet there's still some sort of sense of like hope is there, or triumph can occur, or like people are resilient. And then in other stories, it's much more a sense of like, you know, this is dark and despairing and traumatic, and like, there isn't really much hope after this, and everybody's going to be sort of a little laid low by what happened by this, or literally are dead, or something like that afterwards. And so there's somewhat of a tone thing here that is not necessarily directly represented in the things that occur. And I definitely think about that with what I actually ended up selecting and reading for this time, is that I was like, I'm not really certain if this could fall, or if most people would put this in that category more as a tone piece than as actually what happens. What happens, I think, would count, but does the tone hit the right area for dark fantasy?
Okay, I have a new best bad example.
You got to stop looking at this list, please. I'm going to stop. Promise
now.
Me.
This is now the dark fantasy video games category list on Wikipedia. Porky Pig's Haunted Holiday.
What?
You don't know how dark they got on that, you know? Maybe they got surprisingly dark.
Have you played it?
It's a Super Nintendo game. I know exactly how dark Super Nintendo games got.
I mean, the Ren and Stimpy game I played a few times. It was pretty disturbing and distressing. Really briefly, because we got to talk about what we read, but I thought of another background book, which seems on the surface so similar to like the Holly Black situation I was describing, but I really disliked for how dark it was. And that was Every Heart a Doorway, the first in the Seanan MacGuire Wayward Children series.
Yes.
I didn't like it. It is like really that whole, I haven't gone back and read the series. Maybe I would like other ones, but it was like, could be marketed directly towards me. Matthew just lifted it up. Yep. Could be marked like seemed so like in my wheelhouse, and then I ended up not liking it at all. And I feel like maybe it's a YA adult rift, maybe it's just a tone rift, maybe I just think it was badly written, which in some cases I do. There are some specific bits of that book that I was just like, try again. Around some of the trans stuff specifically. But I have that quibbles about that with lots of books. Yeah, that is one where I feel like in a Holly Black book, like occasionally characters will die, but it's a big deal when it happens. And like that, a lot of the darkness is coming from like a sense of like threat or dread and like relationship tension and like stressful situations. Whereas like, I assume we're going to get into spoilers for this book at some point, but just like lots of beloved characters dying for no reason. Let's get into the books we read, because apparently one of us read that one.
I also read that last summer, and I would consider that whole series pretty dark fantasy. So Yeah, we can talk about that. How about search strategies? I had no subject headings for this one. I was desperate. I floundered.
Because I spent that time looking for books for the book list and also looking for something for myself to read, I just spent a lot of time searching on websites. And there's a lot of like dark fantasy websites and lists of dark fantasy books and stuff like that. And so I just kind of cast a wide net and spent a while tracking down some things. And then I picked the shortest one I could find, which, you know, after last month, where am I interested in? This one was 87 pages, including acknowledgments. So A+.
Yeah.
And then the other one I read, I found on it next to the, on it, on the shelf next to the one I picked up. So,
yeah, there's absolutely lots of book lists, for this genre, that perhaps have different ideas about what the genre is. But, yeah, when I was looking for the BIPOC, authors list, I looked at some of those, looked on Novelist after I figured out how to, use the advanced search to filter out all of the manga. And I also just checked out, there were some books from this genre on my to-read list that I've been wanting to read that I checked out and, like, of course, did not read them because they were long and I read two short books.
Part of my problem was also I just sort of assumed I would have something out already that would count. And then when I finally went through my fiction books, I was like, no, actually, none of these count.
That is very funny. I definitely got caught up in that whole, like, trying to decide if I should be reading more of the horror supernatural side of dark fantasy or more of the grimdark kind of dark fantasy aspect, and spent a while kind of debating around that. I borrowed a couple of items, but yeah, it's the sort of thing where they're long and I could not motivate myself to read something that long, but also that it literally, like, the grim darkness creeping into the only thing I could find in new fantasy novels in the early 2000s was clearly a traumatic experience for me. So I just was, like, deeply unmotivated to go back to that space. So I ended up reading a short one because I was like, well, you know what? This will be short at least. I can get through this for sure. So yeah, that's basically what I did.
I would just like to say briefly in my defense, I read these not only because they were short, but because they were light. So the long books were also very heavy. And so I did, like, one day of dragging around a, you know, 400 plus page book and went, nope, my commute's too long. I can't. I injured my back a few months ago. I'm keeping this one at home. If I read it at home, then I'll read it. I did not read it at home.
Fair.
Yeah, that's fair.
So I will briefly mention Berserk because it's been mentioned several times already. And it is a very popular series. There's over 40 volumes. The author died a couple years ago, but assistants are continuing the story. It is like a medieval fantasy thing with a lot of a guy with a big sword killing a lot of people and monsters and stuff. When I said before that it's very popular with people that don't buy manga, this is, I believe, fair to say, a very heavily pirated series. And one of the reasons I think it's fair to say this is because it doesn't get good, in quotation marks. I did not particularly enjoy this until, like, partway through volume 5. And if you pick up volume 1 and 2 and 3 and 4, it's not what people want. People like the series starting at volume 5. And so people are reading this online for free, and then maybe they go and buy the, like, giant hardcovers or whatever afterwards. So I read volumes 7, 8, and 9 this month, which are part of the first long, very long storyline that people think is good. And I can see why people like it, but it just didn't really do anything for me. I've read 9 volumes of this now, and I'm like, I'm done. I never need to read any more of this series. It's clearly just too grim and too dark for me. There's a lot of child rape. Maybe a lot is too much, but any amount of child rape is a lot of child rape in my books.
Yeah.
And so it's like a plot element, and I'm just like, I don't really want to read this comic that has this as a recurring thing. And I went and read the Wikipedia article for, like, what happens later on in the story, and I'm like, Why would you want to read this comic? It's so depressing, but very popular. So people like that stuff, I guess.
So based on my flailing around and reading of Wikipedia articles, I stumbled upon this author, Gertrude Burroughs Bennett, who is credited in a number of different places as being the woman who invented dark fantasy. I read the book and then I went back and I realized, like, it was one guy in one foreword to a collection of short stories that had crowned her the woman who invented dark fantasy. So I would not necessarily, like, hold this up as a paragon of the genre.
Can I say, this is often why I feel like Wikipedia articles can lead you very much astray on genres, because they're often more like a very, very, very short summary piece of what academics would define the genre as, right? So the academics go back into the history of the genre and find the deep, dark, like one person in one foreword who said this thing one time, and that defines it for everything forever. But that's not how people understand that genre, not even a little bit. And so I just find sometimes like these Wikipedia articles do not reflect like lived reality for most people.
No, for sure.
I was going to ask Jam, what genre would you like to be the founder of? We can say it on this podcast and then hopefully get quoted somewhere.
Yeah.
Sorry, I was eating pizza.
Not a genre I would have thought of immediately, but okay. Nobody else can claim that one.
Honestly, so sorry I was eating pizza. Would be happy to defend that. I did have the thought, I was like, maybe I should not talk too much shit about Seanan McGuire. We are both speculative fiction writers. I have not read other books. I bet they're great. Sincerely, like, obviously she's written a lot. pizza fiction. Why not?
Okay, sorry. We got wildly off track there. Go for it, Megan.
Sorry.
Wow. Okay. So pen name she used is Frances Stevens, and the book that I chose is called The Citadel of Fear, and it's pretty classic, like, pulp weird. It's got some, like, adventurers who are gold digging in Mexico. Not gold digging. Prospecting. That's the word. The novel off opens with them almost dying in the desert before they stumble upon a hidden, mysterious ravine where they find water and are revived and stumble across some Norwegian guy. And they're like, clearly he is hiding something because he has not, you know, staked his claim about whatever it is that he is clearly growing rich off of in this valley. And so they have this, I believe it's called like Hidden World or Lost World. So they discover a community of people who are clearly are untouched by the outside world. They have a traumatic experience. The two prospectors get separated. One of them gets kicked out to the desert and has a terrible time, and the other one stays in the lost world. And then we like fast forward 20 years, and the one who got kicked out, whose name is something very stereotypically Irish, because that was like 50% of his characterization was how Irish he was, and also a good Catholic boy, which was important.
Listeners cannot see, Matthew and I both literally put our hands to our foreheads and then like shook our heads.
Anyway, so he's a wealthy adventurer, whatever, now, and is paying a visit to his sister, who is newly married in this new fancy bungalow. And then he doesn't get a chance to tell her about his experience going back to the place where he thought the lost world had been and not finding much of anything. But he brings her this little piece of porcelain that was a semi-plot point in the first half of the story. And then for various reasons, like, the sister is left alone in the house because, you know, some of the servants, their child is in danger, so they leave, and someone had asked for the night off, and her husband goes off with her brother. And anyway, so she's alone at night, and there is an attack, this terrible attack on the house, which was very traumatic, and she shoots the door full of bullets and, you know, faints. Because that's what ladies do, is they faint. And this is traumatic enough that even though nothing is ever found except for the blood trail, that they leave the house. And so the next part of the story is her brother trying to catch whoever it is that attacked his sister in the night and discovering the horrible, evil, awful thing that began in the beginning of the book that we don't get told about because it, you know, one guy gets kicked out and the other one gets dragged away. So this is very, you know, within the genre of weird pulp, expect lots of, like, gosh, what do you call it? Like, I want to call it Boys Adventure, but it's not Boys Adventure exactly. It's just like How Manly Man-ish Man is the main protagonist, aside from the one sister who's occasionally fainting and the rest of the time charging in. And, you know, anyway. So it was, I wouldn't say a terrible experience. It was really interesting, but it would not have struck me at any point as dark fantasy, unless what you mean by dark fantasy is an encounter with an unknowable supernatural other.
I just went back and looked at what I wrote about Berserk for my own notes, which I described it as hard men comics. So kind of in the same category as Manly Men.
Who are saved, you know, from terrible evil by their pure and untouched faith in God.
Not in Berserk.
No, I don't know. I haven't read Berserk.
Matthew, I love the passiveness of how you said Berserk has been brought up several times now when you have brought up Berserk several times.
You mentioned it as well after I mentioned it.
Uh-huh. The first one that I read, well, should I did them in the order I read them or the order that they were piled on the desk just now? Because that's the order I was going to do. See what I'm going to do. It's already in my hand. I read something of I don't know if this genre has classics, but also one I feel like that gets cited a lot as being archetypal of this genre. And that's Coraline by Neil Gaiman, who we didn't mention, but I think is a name that gets thrown around for this genre. And it is, if you don't know, which would be surprising, it's a middle grade novel about Coraline, a young girl who moves with her parents into a house, finds a door, goes to another world. There's an evil version of everything. That's a really reductive summary, but yeah, it got turned into a movie, very, very popular, and too spooky, too scary. This was both of the novels that I read very much felt like, oh, this is horror. And this felt like kids horror. I would not necessarily recommend this to, you know, I have kids who come into the library work who like fantasy. And this is not what I would point them towards unless they wanted to read something scary. Because I'm an adult human and I had to stop. I was reading on the bus and I had to stop one day. I was like, nope, my heart's beating too fast. I have to stop. Though I also remember things that I read as like a tween and a teen that would be too intense for me as an adult. So I've perhaps been sensitized instead of desensitized by the world. Yeah, I'm not sure what else to say about this one. I guess one thing that I associate with this genre is sort of a lushness of language, which, again, I think comes from my, Holly Black background in this genre. That there is a certain, narrative voice that I felt like this one had. I guess I don't even know if I'd describe it as lush necessarily, but there's definitely a writing style thing going on. In my head, at least for this genre. I really liked it. I feel like I came to Neil Gaiman too late. I've read some of his comics. This might actually be the first Neil Gaiman prose I've ever read because, as I said, I came to him too late. He was already people had hyped him up so much before I read anything of his that I was always like, well, I'm just going to be disappointed if I read it. Also, he's an author who got so celebrity that we knew a lot about his personal life. And part of his personal life was his marriage and divorce from a very New England person, a person from New England that I'm one degrees of separation from. Two. No, my best friend in high school's roommate worked with her in her artist's troupe. And very much knew her just as a person before she got very famous. It was just oh yeah, the person who runs the living statues artist troupe in Boston. This has been a tangent, but Yeah, I haven't read Neil Gaiman is the short version. And I like this one. And I feel like when I started reading it, like the first chapter, I was absolutely reading it in his voice. Because like I said, he's celebrity enough that I've like, I also did see him at a live show once. He was a surprise guest at the Nerdfighter fucking Mountain Goats concert at Carnegie Hall. Yeah. That I went to, him and Kimmy Dawson. Good show, but he was wasted on me. I was way more excited about Kimmy Dawson.
I for a second there, I thought you were dropping some great gossip where you're like, he was wasted.
No. He was very much sober.
That would be amazing, honestly.
Did a live reading of one of John Green's books with Grace Helbig and Hannah Hart. It was a weird show. It was a time in YouTube. That story was leading to somewhere. Oh, yes. I was reading the first chapter in his voice because he is well known enough that I know what he sounds like, despite never having read a ton of his work. That went away. Like it, I feel like it transcended all of the baggage that obviously I'm bringing into reading Neil Gaiman. And so good job. Good book. Too spooky.
I had forgotten Neil Gaiman as an author, which is ridiculous in some ways. But I feel a lot of Sandman, the comics, would count as dark fantasy.
Yeah.
Like, very much so.
Definitely. I agree.
And, like, all of the Vertigo titles that came after that, also, a lot of them fell into the dark fantasy because Neil Gaiman was so influential within the comics world for a long time. I will briefly mention the novella I read, The Lies of the Ajungo by Moses Ose Otomi, who's a Nigerian-American writer. And to give you a glimpse of what this is, chapter one, page one. All the city's citizens, everyone 13 years and older, had their tongues cut away by hot blades, dumped into wagons, and shipped across the continent. So that is telling you what is happening in this book. There's a lot of violence to bodies, like torture stuff happening. It's a very sad and depressing book in a lot of ways. I think it's well written, but also like it's gruesome. And I'm just like, I would read this chapter and be like, why did you have to write this? You know, why? I didn't want to read this section. It's gross.
Okay, so I'm the one who then read Every Heart a Doorway for this episode, which was significantly influenced by the fact that it is basically a novella. It's quite short.
Short month.
Yeah. It's true. We have an excuse. It was a short month. Totally. It's a great excuse. So it's 170-something pages? No, 169 pages.
Nice.
Thank you. I was mouthing that silently.
Yes. What I found interesting about this is I could decide if it counted largely because, as you mentioned, GM, a lot of people, important characters, they seem like they would be the kind of characters you get attached to and play big roles in this book. Just die. And nobody's really particularly buzzed about this whole situation.
They just keep having classes.
A question for you. Do they just die or do they get killed?
They get killed violently. Horrible things. You know, like it's not, I mean, it's not the most gruesome, but it is in some ways. Like they don't just like, they are just killed and have a bad thing happen to their body. A bad thing happens to their body and they die from the trauma of that bad thing. So like, it's not a pleasant death, but that horror isn't really played up. So that's where I was a little bit debating about to what degree this counts as dark fantasy, basically because of that tone aspect of it. It is more focused on other things, per se. But I do think that what is happening is definitely towards the realm of dark fantasy, and it is certainly in the realm of dark fantasy. What is happening here is that some children go through doorways into alternate worlds. These worlds tend to match with these children. Some aspect of their personality that is having to be suppressed within the world that they live in, our world, is matched by this fantastical world that they are sucked into and allows them to express or, you know, like be able to kind of really grow strong within this other aspect of themselves that was previously suppressed. And so a lot of these kids come back and they some of them just want to go back to those worlds where they felt like they were more whole and more true to themselves. So this book is based in a home for those children where they try to basically deal with the fact that they are back from these fantastical worlds and can't get there. The likelihood of them getting back to that fantastical world is very small. And we're following one new arrival. And shortly after this child arrives, and by child, I mean, she's like 17, I think, this teenager arrives. people start getting murdered at the school. Students start getting murdered, but also some of the teachers. And it's gruesome murders, but they happen very quickly over the course of just a couple of nights. And then it's sort of solved. It's very fast. And I think a lot of that is it's a novella. And so to some degree, I feel like the aspects of it that feel strange in terms of that tone is just how fast it's moving through some aspects of the story. Outside of a novella, I would expect certain characters to be fleshed out more. I would expect certain relationships to be fleshed out more. I would expect different, you know, components of the world to have more of an impact than they do. So I think it moves very quickly. And in that way, it feels almost a little bit more like it's almost an allegorical telling of what it's telling, as opposed to like actually the full story in some ways, which is sort of interesting. I don't know that that is intended by this, but that's how it felt a little bit to me. But I you know, on the whole, didn't like I enjoyed it well enough. That may be partially because it just did not feel as dark as I thought it was going to, despite the dark things that were happening. I don't know. It did leave me feeling a little bit like, what is the consequence of this? But there's also additional books. They're all about the same length, though. It's not, this doesn't change in terms of this is the pattern for this. They're short books. There are additional ones. They do follow some of the characters that we meet in the first book. And in some of them, there are consequences from what occurs in this first book that play out. So perhaps some of that sort of consequences of it comes into play in later books rather than in this one. I don't know because I haven't read them.
Are you likely to?
Yeah, actually, I think I will. Mostly because I am very curious. They're very short. It does not take long. Like, this was an evening's easy read. So given how short they are, I'm sort of curious how the author picks up some of the consequences that I know. So I know some of the characters that get followed in later books, and I'm curious how then consequences play out from there. There are some characters that I'm not, I can completely understand, James, some of your questioning around how trans and other, like some of these issues played out in there. It's like, I don't know that that was the best way to frame that, maybe. And I am curious if that continues or not.
I will say I know some of the other books in the series are prequels, not sequels.
Mm, yeah, that's true.
So I don't know which characters get followed. Yeah, I guess you will find out.
Yes, that's true. If I read for,
I couldn't stay interested.
Yeah, if I continue to read them, I will find out. I do actually think there's from my understanding, and I could be wrong on this, there's a core, like, three book series, but I think there's actually, like, five or six of them now total, so it kind of goes forward offwards.
Oh, if you count the ones that are, like, 0.5 or 0.3 or whatever, I think there is eight or ten. Eight of them,
okay, yes.
Yeah.
There's in-betweeners of all types.
Yeah. I am glad that prose fiction has picked up the terrible numbering practices of comic books.
Oh, yes.
Not you're like, oh, have you read 1.3 of this book? Excellent. Good job, everybody.
Yeah. I have no idea. It did feel like they kept coming out.
We just need them to start rebooting series and use the same titles.
Yeah, I read, I think, four of them all at once while I was taking like a week vacation. And do you know how Tor used to send you free books if you had signed up? So I had all of them already, I think on Kindle or something like that. So it was pretty easy. And so I hadn't realized they were novella length until, you know, you get into it and you realize you're like halfway through already and you've only been reading for an hour. because for some reason I had thought that these were portal fantasies, but like of a more traditional sense rather than this is what happens to the portal kids once they get kicked out. And then I stopped because I was mad that they went back to some of the main characters and I was interested in someone else's story. I was like, no, but we've talked about these people already. I want the skeleton boy. Give me the skeleton boy.
Yeah. I understand where you're coming from on that.
It's so kind of interesting to think about this because I'm realizing like that this genre is entirely tone-based.
Yeah.
You know? It's not what the story is, it's how it's told. And I think that's kind of an interesting thing because you can tell like half these stories just in a different way and they would not be, you know, like we've read lots of fiction that have lots of people murdered and it's just like a thing that happens, you know, it's not because the tone is different. It doesn't hit us the same way.
How would each of you having read this book have placed it in relation to dark fantasy? Like firmly, this is dark fantasy or maybe it is or maybe it isn't
Like, taking it individually would be hard, because now I see the arc of them, and I think within the arc of them, they are, for me, dark fantasy. As just a one-off, I think maybe I might have thought it was, like, more of a mystery, playing around with the idea of portal kids.
Yeah, I was going to say the first one, struck me as, like, fantasy murder mystery, but I don't. Again, I don't think it did a great job of that or that was necessarily what I was looking forward to or was the right fit for what she was trying to do. So not knowing how that changes, I can't say. But it was an example that I thought of when we were talking at the beginning of the episode.
So another of the things I mentioned in the Wikipedia article was how oftentimes if horror writers write a fantasy, it is then considered a dark fantasy, either by implication or they just can't help the horror leaking out or something like that.
That sounds pretty horrific to me.
And we had in the library Peter Straub, a noted horror writer's Shadowland, which described itself on the back summary as like a containing magicians and great evil and stuff like that. So I was kind of on the border of whether this was horror or not, but since I hadn't felt like I'd managed to capture dark fantasy yet, I was like, why not? Previously, the first book I mentioned, The Citadel of Fear, was published in installments in 1918. This was published in 1980. And it is two adolescents who are both at a private school. They have a really weird, disturbing year that ends in a fire and a kid dies. And then one of the kids has been talking about his, like, a real magician uncle that he spends the summer with every summer. And he wants his buddy to go with him, and his buddy has been having terrible nightmares and is convinced that something terrible will happen to his friend over the summer. So he's like, well, I have to go. Terrible things happen over the summer, and there is lots of magic in the book. So it was a much more on the horrific side dark fantasy, with lots of supernatural elements and amoral characters. Which, you know, something about adolescence can be horrific all on its own, but it wasn't about that. Just regular human horrificness.
All right, and I will briefly talk about my last one. The other book that I read this month was a novella. It was Flowers for the Sea by Zin E. Rocklin. This is a debut novella, and again, felt like it was horror, but you know, maybe what do I know? I think also the short examples of this genre maybe are more likely to lean horror, because the long examples, there's more space for world building and it's harder to hold that horror tension and dread over that length of book. Yeah, this one was definitely a horror and very possibly a dark fantasy. A lot of it's kind of magic light. So the plot is that the protagonist lives in this world where she lives on a boat because the land has been overtaken by the sea. And they're struggling to sustain humanity through this time. And also nobody on it's a bit of a children of men situation where nobody is successfully giving birth. And she is pregnant. She's extremely pregnant. And there are some content warnings at the beginning of this, an author's note that says, letting readers know that, among other things, she describes as the realities of birth, which is true. I think one of the things I would have, the language I would have used specifically for this is traumatic pregnancy, because she very much does not want to be pregnant, hates being pregnant, does not want to be a mother, is in this position because so many things have gone wrong in her life. She's lost her whole family. She's been like forced into this relationship with this ex-prince. Yeah. Some of that was like, yeah. And like to that extent, there's also a lot of, I would say body horror. But some of the body horror is just like being pregnant body horror, the horror of like being pregnant and also like, you know, living under deck in a ship and malnutritioned. Yeah, let's go with it.
I once had a friend describe pregnancy as having a skeleton grow inside of you, like a second skeleton grow inside of you. And like, there's a lot of elements of pregnancy that are like very body horror, if you think about it.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. Yeah, and of course it's some, you can see some tentacles on the cover, some eldritch horror stuff happens. They're on the sea, you know, it's gonna happen. Yeah, I'd be interested to read something else from this author. Yeah, since it's her debut, I can't say for sure if she's gonna go in a more fantasy direction, if she is a horror author, yeah, so I'm interested to see what's next. I think it was well done, but definitely more horror than I anticipated reading this month.
So the final book I will mention is Twice Cursed, edited by Marie O'Regan and Paul Kane, which is a short story collection that I found on the shelf when I was looking for The Lies of a Jungo. And it ended his stories by Neil Gaiman and Joe Hill. So really, I should have mentioned it when we were talking about Neil Gaiman earlier, but I thought it would lead to like a potential discussion, because a lot of these are fairy tale retellings. And I think that is something that I feel there's a lot of dark fantasy fairy tale stuff. Because, you know, you take the story for children, which Anna said earlier was originally a story for adults. So you've taken the story for adults, turned it into a story for children, and then made it for adults again. So there's multiple retellings of like Snow White and stuff in this.
I would like to specify, I did not say for adults. I said they were dark and then they became
Disneyed.
And this is just turning them dark again.
Yeah.
Which, because childhood was not conceived of in the same way in the past, and therefore there was no like having them for adults or children in the same way.
Very fair. Yes.
You were mentioning Vertigo series, comic series that were influenced by Sandman, and I thought of Fables, which is this kind of thing, fairy tales, but dark and gritty. And I hate Fables. I really did not think I was going to spend like this is a genre I like, and I feel like I've spent more words on books I didn't enjoy. But yeah, I really bounced hard off of Fables. But it may be because I read it. Like, I know a lot of people who really liked it and read it as it was coming out. And I read it several years after. Like, I think right after they had, like, finished it. They'd finished the last volume. And, oh no, it's too present. Never mind.
It stopped for a while and it came back.
Okay, I think I read it right after it stopped, maybe. But anyway, yeah, by the time I read it, I was like, I don't think, you know, dark fairy tales is inherently interesting. I think it's been done too much. You have to do something else.
I was going to name drop Angela Carter's The Bloody Chamber and Other Stories as something that came up as sort of classic dark fantasy with on the fairy tale retelling thing. I just didn't feel like any fairy tale retellings this month.
Yeah. I remember when I was a teenager, I read Deerskin. I forget who the author of Deerskin is. It's a retelling of a fairy tale, and it is very brutal. It is set in fantasy sort of land in terms of its like framing and everything. But it's very brutal. And it was very, like, I reread that book quite a few times. It was, like, formative to me in some ways. But I think it's interesting the degree to which, as much as brutal things happen within that, there is still a narrative going on where the protagonist is going through a growth and is empowered through that growth, right? And to me, that is a thing that I am less familiar with experiencing through what I conceive of as dark fantasy, right? So even though in most ways what happens and how it happens and that would be very dark fantasy, never would have conceived of that as dark fantasy, even though it is a dark retelling of a fairy tale with some very like brutal and grim things that happen set within a fantasy like framework.
Was that Robin McKinley?
Yes, that was a Robin McKinley.
Appeal factors. None of us know any, huh?
Well, I think this one is challenging because I feel like it was hard to really nail down what it was. Like, I don't know that we ever fully solved some of the issues of like grim dark versus horror versus having both occur at the same time. And does having just one or the other count, or does it have to have both, or like, what is it? Right? So that makes it a little bit harder to nail down the appeal factors aspect.
I think what Matthew said about tone is one of the key aspects, like how you feel when you're reading the book, the darkness of the dark fantasy, like the fantastical elements in my head starting out, it felt like it had to be sort of stereotypical fantasy. But when I realized like a lot of the horror supernatural elements could bring it into the fantastical, then that made it a little bit easier. But it's really like the feeling that you're getting from your reading experience is a little bit dark, a little bit like I sort of imagine why people are drawn to true crime is the darkness of it is like brushing up against this thing that gives you some eerie tingles from the safety of the book world. You're dipping your toes in, you are not living that brushing up against the darkness.
Yeah, like similar to the reasons people like horror fiction in general.
Mm-hmm. And then some of the confusion is just because of the way the marketing terms have been recycled.
Yeah, some people are definitely like, oh, it's a fantasy book with a vampire or a ghost in it? Dark fantasy.
Yeah.
Or, yeah, alternatively, it's dark fantasy. Oh, that means it's super grim and everybody is amoral and murdering each other all the time. Murdering could stand in for many other tortures and or horrible things being done.
It's interesting because I'm sure that dark science fiction is also a subgenre, but it's not one that like I ever hear people mention or talk about.
Yeah, it's true.
I'm struggling to say anything new because I feel like we've just done horror and we've talked about fantasy. So like magical elements and some grimness in which you don't have to actually partake in your real life. And some acknowledgement that people are shitty and don't learn anything, maybe.
Or at least never learn things in time.
Would we read the genre again?
Yeah, I feel like I've been discovering new dark fantasy adjacent authors recently. I'm excited to follow up on their, most of them are novellas, so that's appealing.
I will read more Monstrous. I think I do like that series, and I will read more. The Twice Cursed book, I did not finish, but for those paying attention to my resolutions, my book reading resolution for the year, it is a short story collection, and so I read 7 short stories from it, which is many times more than the short stories I've read not in that book so far this year.
Golf claps.
I wasn't sure if that was going to get captured by the recording, but both me and Jam were giving you golf claps.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Yeah. I feel like I could talk about what is appealing to me about the dark fantasy that I have read and enjoy. But it is so different than some of the other fantasy that we've described. Like, at the very beginning of the episode, we were saying like, fantasy is broad focus or big focus instead of small focus. And I'm like, I like a small focus story. And that's of the dark fantasy I've read. That's an appeal factor. But I think this one, what we've learned in this episode, as far as reader's advisory, is to have, a longer conversation with the person who's looking for fantasy recs about, if they ask for dark fantasy, ask them what they mean by that.
Yep.
Definitely.
Give specific examples and, go from there. Actually, Jam, I was going to say, I feel like there's a little bit of what you say about that smaller scale stories that fits a better towards the horror to some degree, which is funny because horror can be very like, you can have cosmic horror and things like that, but it's often very much about the individual like experience going through that, as opposed to like fantasy is very much often about like where the whole nation, country, whatever it is going to be destroyed / the world is going to be destroyed if XYZ thing doesn't occur. In very big, bold strokes in some way. And there could be very personal things happening within that, but that's like the motivator of the story to some degree. And the horror is personal. Fear is personal, right? It's very in on the personal side of it.
Yeah, some people will find something horrific that other people don't because of their personal experiences.
Totally. So I feel like that keeps it closer to home to some degree. And I feel like if I were to read more in dark fantasy, I think that interests me more than the grimdark side of it. I am very low tolerance for grimdark fantasy. It's just not there. however, I have had some good reading experiences that are more towards the horror fantasy side. So I suspect that taking it from that angle, I probably will read more dark fantasy in the future, but probably not grimdark because I ain't there for it. Thanks for listening to this episode of the Book Club for Masochists. Find us on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts. If you like the show, subscribe so you never miss an episode, and consider giving us a positive rating and or review. If you've already done that, thank you.
For all our URLs and social media accounts, the 4 in our name is a numeral. You can go to our website at bookclubform.com, join our Facebook group at facebook.com/group/bookclubform, and find us on Instagram at bookclubform. Our email address is bookclubform@gmail.com.
On our website, you can find show notes that will provide links to things that we've mentioned, social media info for everyone who appeared on this episode, and our genre-based book lists by titles by authors of color.
You can suggest a genre or title for us to read or request a reading recommendation from us. We have a form you can fill out on our website, bookclubform.com. No promises on reading your specific suggestion. We got a lot to read, but if you ask for a recommendation, we will give you one.
All opinions are our own and do not reflect our places of employment if they exist.
Book Club for Masochists is licensed under a Creative Commons Attributions Non-Commercial Share Alike 4.0 International License.
Our theme music is To Arrakis by Dark Sun from the Free Music Archive.
New episodes of the show are always the first Tuesday and sometimes the third Tuesday of every month.
Join us again on Tuesday, April 2nd, when we will be talking about the format of nonfiction graphic novels and comics.
And then, after that 5-hour episode, On Tuesday, April 16th, we'll be giving an update on media we've recently enjoyed. I guess we could split it into two episodes.
Two and a half hour episodes.
Oh my god. Don't you just have like a special bonus expanded edition episode?
Yeah, I'll just make Anna listen to me and do something, so.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Just a haunted episode so far.
A kitty! A cat has just appeared on screen, so that makes me feel better.
But she is dark fantasy because she's a Victorian ghost child.
but Victorian ghost stories are a different genre.
That's true.
I was gesturing towards the book, but none of you could see it.
So. Doesn't work well in an audio medium.
No.